What's shaking, friends? How we doing today? Welcome back to the show. If this is your first time here, hello. And an extra warm welcome to you. This is Candid with Carrie Lippert-Gillespie, and I am your host, Carrie Lippert-Gillespie. I hope your week is off to a great start. I'm not sure what brought you here, but I am sure glad that it did because I am excited to have you, and this is going to be a fun one, you guys. I just have a lot of things to share. It has been a busy week since I last chatted with you, and I have a bunch of things to fill you in on. The first one being that I am back in Kansas City, Missouri, where I live, after spending a long weekend in Los Angeles, California. Sunny Los Angeles, California. And oh my goodness, I don't know why I live somewhere where it's not always warm. I truly, truly love the Midwest, but I truly, truly hate Midwest winters, and the weather really affects my mood. I've told you guys that before. It is so true. And every time I go to somewhere like Los Angeles or anywhere warm, I am reminded that I am just a happier person when it's above, you know, 50 degrees. Anything below 50 degrees, I'm just not currently interested in that being a part of my journey. Nonetheless, here I am in Kansas City. But the trip to Los Angeles was really, really great. I had really smooth sailing when it came to my flights. I was really nervous with Omicron and everything going on with that, how my flights were going to be. But honestly, I had seamless flights there and back. So really grateful for that. No delays, no problems, no people being really up in arms about having to wear a mask, which is good to see because it's just the rule, people. Like, just wear the mask. Just follow the rule and we'll all be fine. Like, no one wants to wear a mask, but we're all doing it because it's currently the rule. So just do it and then we can get on with our flight. Like, I didn't have any viral moments like that, thank goodness. So yeah, everything was smooth sailing in terms of travels. I spent a wonderful couple of days there for some work things, which was really, really fun and really great. And I got to see one of my good friends and his girlfriend. They live in the Los Feliz neighborhood of Los Angeles, which is like a really hip, oh my God, I sound so old that I just said hip. But it's so true. It's like young musicians, hipster, young professionals who are like artist types and like tons of bougie coffee shops and bookshops and vintage stores and like lots of fun things going on. Just a really great neighborhood. One of my favorite neighborhoods in that area. I really like Silver Lake as well. I like Echo Park. Like those types of neighborhoods are all like have similar vibes to me, in my opinion. And so, yeah, it was really great to be there and stay with them. They have the cutest apartment and like tons of light, like natural light, and her style of how she decorates was like to a T, almost exactly like mine. So I felt like so at home. It was crazy. And they were so welcoming and it was wonderful to spend time with them. They are both actors. And so they're creative as well as, you know, me. Like, I know my creativity is different, but we had so many good stimulating conversations. I don't know if this is just a sign of getting old, but nothing gets me going quite like a stimulating conversation, like small talk. Like, I have no interest in, I don't want to say no interest, but I have very little interest in small talk. Like, let's cut to the chase. Like, tell me what you want most in life. Tell me your deepest, darkest fears. Tell me your traumas. Tell me everything. Like, that's what I want to dive into. Like, all the BS, little talk, like, get it out of my way. I have no time. So yeah, we had just some great chats and it was great to go to dinner with them, explore with them, spend some time with them when I wasn't doing work things. We also went and visited a friend of ours, like a mutual friend of ours who lives down in Hermosa Beach, which is obviously closer to the water, where Los Feliz is more inland in Los Angeles, but they live on the beach and it was incredible. I always have to go see the beach when I'm that close to it and it was fun. They live like two blocks from it. Truly a Zen lifestyle. Like, I am so jealous of their living situation, and the whole Hermosa, like Manhattan Beach area is really, really wonderful. And I really just loved being able to hang out with them. We sat around a fire, which was great. A corgi found me. Yeah, their neighbor has a corgi. You guys know I'm obsessed with corgis. It was the cutest little thing. I took it as a good omen. The other thing that I took as a good omen is that an orange kitty found me. That's right. One of their neighbors has an orange kitty and it just like walked upon my path magically. And I was like, all right, the corgi was one thing, but the orange kitty, like, we cannot make this up. We all know that I am obsessed with Cheeto and the orange kitty and everything that, you know, comes to me wanting an orange kitty named Cheeto. So again, just so many good omens coming my way. Then on Saturday, I had a full day workshop with an agency that was really, really fun, a hosting workshop. And I got to work with an amazing woman named Marky Costello, who was just a hoot and so knowledgeable and just so helpful to, get her coaching, get her feedback and her advice, and just she's a great person to be in the know when it comes to that industry. So I was really grateful to go to her clinic or her boot camp and to be in her sphere of influence and her sphere of knowledge. It was just a lot of fun, a lot of good work things that I'm just really excited about. I can't say a ton more, but that's the gist of it, okay? Like, it was a fun trip, did the things, had all the bougie coffee, like had the $10 avocado toast. It was great. I'm going to give you guys a quick content update before we get into our trending topics. But the one thing I really want to tell you about that I read was a book by Dr. Joe Dispenza called Becoming Supernatural. I have always been a big fan of Dr. Joe Dispenza. I heard him speak on a couple of podcasts. He's been all over the podcast circuit and was really, you know, taken by his methods and what he does. And he really kind of explains the scientific aspect of manifesting and healing yourself and how it happens in a scientific way in our brains. And it's really interesting. Like, anyone who's a skeptic or who is like, the woo-woo side of spirituality and manifestation is not for me. Like, I hear you. It's kind of not for me either. He takes a scientific approach to everything that's going on when you, you know, are sick and trying to heal yourself, or when you're trying to, quote unquote, like manifest a job or a situation or a scenario. And, you know, I'm not a science gal. Effing hate science, to be quite honest with you, but it's very practicality based, and practicality is something I can get around with. Like, I can sink like my knowledge and my understanding and my brain into like the practicality of it. So I really recommend his book, Becoming Supernatural. Parts of it are going to be dense and are going to move slower. Hang in there. If you are interested in this, like, it's totally worth it. There were a couple chapters that I took really slow because it was dense. There's a lot of science stuff going on. And like I said, I'm not a science person, trust me, but the payoff is well worth it. And I have to give credit where credit is due. I've known about this book for a while, Becoming Supernatural, but I was turned off by it because of how dense it was. But then someone who I really look up to, Scout Sobel, who is the founder and CEO of Scout's Agency. She's also co-host on the OK Sis podcast. And then she has a book as well called The Emotional Entrepreneur. And I've actually worked with her as a client. I've done some consulting, like she has consulted. I've paid her to consult with me on my podcast and with other things. And so I've worked with her and I really value her opinion and her take on all things like, you know, mental health and spirituality and things like that. And she was talking about this book that she was just diving into it and really recommended it. So she and her, you know, saying how great it was really pushed me to finally take the leap. And I'm glad she did, because I finished that on the plane ride there and the plane ride back and really enjoyed it. So Becoming Supernatural by Dr. Joe Dispenza. I also recommend that you check him out. Just put his name in Apple Podcasts and a bunch of episodes where he's been guest on will come up. Like, I know he's been on the 2 Be Magnetic podcast. I know he's been on like Lewis House's podcast and the Mind Your Business podcast. Like, he's been on tons of podcasts and all of his interviews are really phenomenal and really educational and entertaining. And I just get a lot from him every time I hear him speak. In terms of TV show content, I've really just started watching one new show, and that is Hacks on HBO Max. And I have to give credit where credit is due on this one, because really the person who I heard talking good things about this show originally was Claudia Ashray on the Morning Toast podcast. I am a toaster. I love Jackie and Claudia. And Claudia is a comedian, of course. And this show is about a comedian. Jean Smart plays like a comedian who is like washed up. And she hires this, you know, against her better judgment, this young writer to help her rejuvenate her career. And at first they hate each other, but then they slowly start to bond and love each other in this kind of weird way. And it's just really great TV. And they're short episodes. They're like 30 minutes. But Jean Smart is just a treat of a woman. So I'm really enjoying her performance. And the entire show is like funny and light, but also they dive into like some heavier topics, which I find to be a good mix of what I am looking for in terms of, you know, shows that I'm trying to watch these days. Things that are really heavy just aren't doing it for me. I want some other kind of thing to keep, you know, my interest peaked, whether it's, you know, something funny or it's like satire or like whatever it is, like it's got to be something else. The shows that move really slow and are like super drama filled, like are just not doing it for me lately. So I gave Hacks a try and I'm really glad that I did, because it is a good show. Recommend for sure. Let's move it right along into our trending topics of the last week. There are some big ones, like some things happened in the last week and I want to share my thoughts on all of it. So story number one is that Machine Gun Kelly and Megan Fox are engaged. On January 11th, MGK popped the question to his actress girlfriend. Megan wrote on her Instagram with a video of the romantic proposal, quote, "In July of 2020, we sat under this tree. We asked for magic. We were oblivious to the pain we would face together in such a short period of time. Unaware of the work and sacrifices the relationship would require from us, but intoxicated off of all of the love and the karma. Somehow a year and a half later, we walked through hell together, and having laughed more than ever I imagined possible. He asked me to marry him, and just as in every lifetime before this one, as in every lifetime that will follow, I said yes, .. and then we drank each other's blood, end quote. You guys, we all knew this would happen. It was just a matter of when. These two have been hot and heavy ever since they went public with their romance in June 2020. Like, they have been the hottest couple ever. They are just one of those couples that is better together. Like, and better together, I mean, like, their marketability and their likability and how much people want to know what they're doing and what they're wearing and what they're seeing and what they're, you know, I don't know, obsessed with. Like, with like them separate is like, okay, like celebrities being celebrities, whatever. Them together is like the world is obsessed with them. And so I think this is a great PR move. I don't want to call their marriage a PR move, but like, we knew this would happen. They are obsessed with each other. They've been all over each other since they started dating. Like, they are just the weirdest but most lovable couple that everyone is obsessed with. I love that journey for them. And I've loved being a part of the magic of it all, especially when we saw Kravis get married or get engaged, I should say, in November. Like, we knew this was only a matter of time. These two couples have been joined at the hip, and I am like beside myself. Like, I'm so happy. I knew it was coming. I love them as a couple. It's even like, it's so them. Like, everything they do is so on brand for them. And, you know, as someone who's in social media and marketing and hosting and all this other stuff, like, I appreciate a good brand more than you know. And so I just appreciate the fact that everything they do is so on brand. Their ring, like the ring that he got her, is so like them. It's two stones put together, like huge stones, by the way. These are not little stones, like a diamond and an emerald, and they are like joined together. And it's supposed to signify her birthstone and his birthstone. And it's absolutely stunning. And like I said, just so totally on brand for them. And then her message in the video about all this stuff she wrote and then drinking each other's blood, like, so them, like, bravo, bravo, bravo. They should teach a masterclass on marketing and branding themselves as a couple. Marketing and Branding Your Love by Machine Gun Kelly and Megan Fox. Like, I would take that class in a heartbeat. Literally the second I saw they got engaged, I was like, in my head spinning of what the wedding is going to be like. You know, can you imagine? Like, I could see her wearing something really non-traditional, like a black dress or like a red dress or like, I don't know. But like, the wedding is going to be so fire. I am giddy just thinking about how magical it's going to be. And I can't wait. I can't wait to see what they do. Our next story is about a longtime couple that called it quits. Jason Momoa and Lisa Bonet split after 16 years together. The Game of Thrones star shared a joint statement with Lisa on January 12th, announcing their split after 4 years of marriage and more than a decade together as a couple. The pair wrote on Instagram, "We have all felt the squeeze and changes of these transformational times. A revolution is unfolding and our family is of no exception, feeling and growing from the seismic shifts occurring." They went on to say that they were, quote, "parting ways in marriage and sharing the news, not because we think it's newsworthy, but so that as we go about our lives, we may do so with dignity and honesty." They go on to say they wanted to free each other in order to be who they're learning to become. I think I join the entire world when I say that this was truly shocking. These two, like, if you know anything about their story, it is an amazing, wonderful, beautiful love story. And I really thought these two were endgame. Like, I could not see a world where these two wouldn't be together until death do them part. I was really shocked by this. And I don't say that lightly because there's not a lot of celebrity relationships falling apart that would shock me, you know, these days. There's just not. Like, I know what Hollywood relationships are like. I know how hard it is. Like, I know that the chips are stacked against you from the get-go as soon as you put two famous people together. But I really, really thought that these two would be the exception to the rule. And I was shocked by this. If you don't know their love story, it's truly beautiful, like, incredible. I won't bore you with telling you at all, but like, just Google it. It's wonderful. Of course, she was previously married to Lenny Kravitz. She had Zoe Kravitz with Lenny. They divorced. Jason and her got together back in 2004. They were together for a long, long time. Like I said, they were together for over a decade before they got married. And they had two other kids together. So they just had a beautiful story and they had a beautiful family together. Like, Jason and Lenny are famously like pretty good friends. And Zoe's relationship with Jason has always been really good. Like, they just had a beautiful, synergistic, like, modern family going. And I really thought it was a beacon of what's possible when families break up and or not even break up, but just change and pivot. And so to see this happen for them was really sad. But it sounds like they are taking a really mature approach. I am not the type of person who views like a divorce or a breakup as quote unquote a failure. Like, I think relationships come and go because I think that people change, especially in a setting in Hollywood where you have so many things going on around you and so many other resources and just things vying for your attention. Like, it's hard to make a relationship work. Like, I totally believe that. And I don't see a divorce as being something that's a failure. Like I said, I just see it as being like the relationship has run its course. And like, we're moving on to become, like they said in their statement, like the people we need to be. And for some reason or another, they've decided they can't be those people when they're together. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, people change, people evolve, you know, whatever it is. So I wish them all the best. But nonetheless, I was surprised by this. I really was. Story number three is Jamie Lynn Spears addressing her involvement with Sister Britney's conservatorship in her GMA interview. Late last week, Jamie Lynn sat down for an interview on Good Morning America, where she opened up about her family's, quote, complicated dynamics. She, of course, touched on her relationship with her sister, Britney Spears, and touched on her opinion of the pop star's termination of her conservatorship after 13 years last November. When asked about what she thought of the conservatorship being terminated, Jamie Lynn said, quote, I was happy. First of all, I don't understand. When it was put in place, I was 17 years old. I was about to have a baby. So I didn't understand what was happening, nor was I focused on that. I was focused on the fact that I was a 17-year-old about to have a baby. I understand just as little about it then as I do now. In her forthcoming memoir, Things I Should Have Said, Jamie Lynn recalled a request she claimed her sister made to her amid the conservatorship, but denied playing an active role in the process. Quote, I've always been my sister's biggest supporter. So when she needed help, I set up ways to do that. I went out of my way to make sure she had the contacts she needed to possibly go ahead and end this conservatorship and just end this all once and for all for our family. If it's going to cause this much discord, why continue it? I did take the steps to help, but how many times can I take the steps without, you know, she has to walk through the door, end quote. This interview was so interesting to me. And the whole concept and thought that she is putting out a book called Things I Should Have Said that is coming out soon is really interesting to me. And, you know, getting a book made and published takes a lot of time. So the fact that she wrote this book probably at least a year or two ago, and the fact that Britney's conservatorship ended in November, you know, when the book was still in the process of like going through edits and being published and things like that. Like, I just think this is really going to drive up sales of the book and really create a demand for her for interviews. And yeah, like I said, sales demands for the book, because, you know, up until this, it takes years to get a book made a lot of times, at least a year or two. And Britney was still pretty much silenced because she was in the conservatorship. Now that she's not, it's really changing the landscape of how the press of this all is going. And they are really going at it back and forth through the press. Britney went onto Twitter and like went on this huge rant that was very Britney-like. I mean, it was kind of rambled and disheveled and like here and there, and there was emojis going on and there was just weird things going on, which is Britney. If you follow her on Instagram, you know that is like par for the course for how she talks and how she expresses herself. So it's sad for me to see them as sisters fighting in the media in such a way like this, because I have a sister and I can't imagine going through something like this in the public eye and doing it all like through, you know, Twitter or Instagram or random interviews through the press. Like, so as someone that has a sister, I feel for this and it's sad. But as someone who's like interested in pop culture and interested in the temperature of how this is all gonna heat up and play out, like, I am waiting here with bated breath because this is just such a stunning turn of events. Like I said, because the conservatorship ended in November, and I don't think Jamie Lynn could have guessed that this is how it would all play out and how it would affect the press and, you know, the perception of this book that she is publishing. You guys know that it is pretty obvious that I am Team Britney throughout this all. I think that her family has used her and abused her for her fame and her notoriety like over and over and over and over again. And I don't think any member of her family is immune to that. Do I think certain members of her family have used her more? Hell yeah. Do I think her dad has like been the worst? Yeah. But do I think her mom and her sister and her brother are also guilty in their own ways? Hell yeah. Like, so do I think Jamie Lynn is the bad guy here? No, but she's definitely not the good good guy, and she's definitely not the martyr, in my opinion, that she's making herself out to be. Yes, she was 17 when the conservatorship started, and she was a minor and about to have a baby. I understand that. But the conservatorship went on for 13 years. So at any point when you got your life, you know, a little more on stable ground, you could have easily become involved and help and been a voice for her. And that either was a decision that you made not to do, or it was a decision that you were shied away from, or whatever it is. But like the whole fact that when it started, she was 17 and didn't know, like we understand, but like that was years ago. You're now 30, you know, whatever. Like you could have done something in between then and now. It's not mutually exclusive that you didn't understand when you were 17, so you can't ever do anything about it. So that theory, that like excuse doesn't do anything for me. It literally like negates itself right there. I find it hard to believe that Brittany would turn her nose up at any family member that showed her any kindness. So I don't think Brittany gains anything from you know, poo-pooing on her sister. I really don't. I think if her sister were there for her, Brittany would be like, yeah, my family sucks, but my sister is the only one that was there for me. But instead, Brittany's just saying, yeah, my family sucks, period, end of sentence. Like, no one has been there for me. They've all used me. And I'm inclined to believe her. I just don't see what she gains by lying about that. She's already had everything taken from her. She's already lost all her freedom, you know, the rights to her money, the rights to her reproductive organs, the rights to her children, the rights to everything in her life. She's already lost all that before. So what does she gain, truly, by like just choosing to shit on her sister for no reason? I mean, and that's what I come back to and why I still think that I am on Brittany's side and see her point of view and am just going to ride or die with her on this one, because I don't think she gains anything. In terms of the book, you guys know I'm a book junkie and specifically a celebrity memoir junkie. I will probably check this book out from the library because I am just, I need to know what's in it. I really do. I would never buy it or spend my money on it, but I will check it out at the library and read it and sit with bated breath to hear what she has to say. And we'll see. You guys know I'll report back to you. I'm eager to see what's in the book, what more she has to say, any of it. I really am curious. And so I will report back when the book finally comes out, and we'll see how this evolves. I hope that they can clean it up in terms of doing everything on social media. I never like to see that as someone who's really close to their family, loves their siblings. That's always hard for me to see. So I really do hope they can mend this. I just don't know how. There's so much damage that's been done. Our fourth and final story is that the 2022 Oscars will have a host for the first time since 2018. After 3 years without a host, the Oscars will have one for the ceremony that airs on March 27th on ABC. The president of Hulu Originals and ABC Entertainment announced that the Oscars would indeed return to a host after 3 years without one on Tuesday morning, but he did not elaborate on who that host might be. Jimmy Kimmel served as the last host of the Academy Awards, having emceed the ceremony in 2017 and 2018 to generally positive reviews. Other hosts over the past decade included Chris Rock in 2016, Neil Patrick Harris in 2015, Ellen DeGeneres in 2014, Seth MacFarlane in 2013, Billy Crystal in 2012, and James Franco and Anne Hathaway in 2011. Oh my God, do not remind us. The MacFarlane and Franco Hathaway stints were seen as a bid by ABC and the Academy to attract a younger audience, but as we all know, those were pretty pitiful, pitiful performances and did not hit the mark, to say the least. Here are my thoughts, guys. All right. You know that I am an advocate of advocates of advocates for hosts, good hosts, like trained professional hosts hosting things. I have said that before. I'll say it again. I do think that award shows, for the most part, do best when there is a dedicated host. That being said, it's a really tricky time to be an award show and to be an award show host. And that is because the viewership for award shows is declining like rapid fire, like not just for the, you know, Oscars, but for every award show, the viewership is going down. Like it just is. And also, you know, late night hosts tend to be, and comedians tend to be, who get these gigs. And I think the world is just sick of that, you know, type of person hosting. You know, they're sick of the Jimmy Kimmels and the Ricky Gervaises, which I would watch Ricky Gervais host like anything. Like, I love Ricky Gervais. When he hosted the Golden Globes last time, like, I was in stitches. The guy is so hilarious. Like, I am not on board with him not being hosting. Like, I think he should host Everything and Anything. Personal opinion. Anyway, moving on. But people, you know, just complain about the fact that they're sick of late night hosts getting all these hosting gigs. But they also, like, when we try to put other people in there, when we try to put an actor in there, you know, the James Franco and Anne Hathaway of it all, like, it was so bad, you guys. Like, it was the worst of the worst. People still talk about what an abomination and how horrible that year was. And they're great actors. Like, they're great people, but, like, it just doesn't hit the same. So the frustration is, like, we're sick of these late night hosts, whatever. But then, like, there's not really anyone else that's better, because hosting is not acting and acting is not hosting. They're correlated. You're performing in a way, but good actors don't always make good hosts, and vice versa. So it's a tricky thing to do. And I've said it once and I'll say it again, like, good hosts make it look easy. I get people all the time that tell me that my job looks fun and it looks easy. And my reaction is always the same, that's a compliment, because that I am good enough that I make it look easy. And that is really where the beauty in it lies. Like, it's not as easy to do as people think, and to be likable while also delivering what you need to deliver, saying the right thing, saying it at the right time, saying it with the right, you know, tone in your voice, and really hitting your marks, and also coming off likable to the audience and then also to who's on TV. So I think it's a really tricky place to be in. I do think that they should have a host. Who it should be, I don't really know. Like I said, I would watch Ricky Gervais host anything. I love him, and I love that he just doesn't care. That's my type of person. I think Kevin Hart should have a shot at hosting. I was really disappointed that he got his shot taken away because of some tweets from, like, you know, 1987, basically, that were just stupid. Like, he should have gotten his chance to host, and I don't know why they took it away from him. I would love to see, like, a female comedian do it and do it really well. Which comedian? I'm not sure. But if we're going to have some comedians up there, let's get rid of, like, the white guys, and let's get some women up there. Some, maybe a woman of color, like Leslie Jones. Oh my gosh, Leslie Jones hosting the Oscars. Like, that would be a party and a half. She is hilarious. I'm not sure. There are so many good women in comedy who this, like, hosting the Oscars would be a big get for them and would be a big step up in their career. And I think they would do a great job at it. So I'd like to see them get creative as to who they're asking to host it. I'm glad that a host is coming back, but I think that they need to choose wisely, like, really put some time and thought into who they're going to choose and make the correct choice, because award shows are at this place right now where they can't afford to keep losing viewership. And as someone who really enjoys the red carpet of award shows and really, really enjoys actually watching the award shows, I really want them to get their shit together so I can continue to watch them. So we shall see. I'm not sure. I'm glad there's going to be a host, but TBD on who will do it. I gave you my suggestions. So that's really all I have at this moment. Alrighty, y'all. Now that you are informed and in the know, let's keep it right on moving. We're going to head right into the interview portion of the show. Today's guest is Shay Holland. Shay is a TV host who is currently starring in HGTV's Unfinished Business. I met Shay a number of months ago when I joined the Hosts in LA Facebook group, which, if you are a host and not a part of that group, I really recommend you go check it out. It is a great community. Shay is the admin of that group, and she does an incredible job building up other hosts and really creating a wonderful sense of community. I met her there and immediately took to her, and actually she was offering sessions with hosts who wanted more kind of personalized advice and opinions, coaching sessions with her over Zoom. So I scheduled one with her and we immediately hit it off and have stayed in touch since then and have continued to connect and continued to just be resources for one another in this hosting area. And she is just a really bright light in this space. And one of the things I love about her the most is that she believes wholeheartedly, it's not like a joke for her. It's not a trendy thing. She believes in community over competition. And I as well believe really strongly in that. And she embodies it in everything that she is doing in the Hosts in LA community. And the amazing thing about when you give to others is that it comes back to you tenfold. And that is definitely apparent when she landed an incredible gig hosting on HGTV. That's right, the HGTV, her new show, Unfinished Business, which just premiered a couple weeks ago. It is absolutely incredible how amazing it's been for her. And I am so excited for everything that she has coming her way. She deserves it all and then some. I think you guys are really going to enjoy hearing her story. She started, like a lot of hosts do, in the news field. and really found a lot of doom and gloom in the reporting that she was doing, you know, for smaller markets. A lot of times you have to go to a smaller market and work your way up. Well, a lot of those smaller markets, what makes news is shootings and murders and car crashes and house fires, and it's heavy, heavy stuff. And she was really struggling with that being the stories that she was telling. And she decided that she wanted to make a purposeful pivot. And we kind of walked through that in this episode. And she just tells us how she got to where she is. And it's a really beautiful story. And she tells it so elegantly and wonderfully. And like I said, it's not a coincidence that good things are happening for her, because she puts out so much goodness into the world. So it only makes sense that just as much goodness comes back to her. I know you guys are really going to enjoy her story and her wisdom. So I will let her do all the rest of the talking and take it away. Without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Shea Holland. Shea, welcome to the show. How's it going?
It's so good to be with you, Carrie. Thanks so much for having me.
I am honored to have you here. It's been so great getting to know you recently, and I think everyone is going to love this conversation. So let's start at the beginning. Tell us where you grew up and what you were like as a child.
That's a great question. So I grew up in a military family, so we were kind of all over, and I loved it. I absolutely loved military life because you could have adventures every single day. We lived on army bases, which were very safe because, you know, there's a perimeter you can't really get outside of. And so we would leave at, you know, 8 or 9 in the morning. And the rule was just whenever we heard the sound to be back for a meal, then you ran back home. But we could it was just fantastic. So as a child, I was definitely the daring one. I loved to do whatever my dad was doing, if that was rappelling or rock climbing or, you know, going on an adventure in the wilderness for 3 days. I did all of that stuff. So it was an ideal way to be raised as a kid.
Was there any specific place that you lived that really left an impression on you? Because if you were an army brat or whatever, you get moved around quite a bit. Is there one space that, you know, you consider home or that really left an impact on you?
You know, definitely California. So we lived up north of here. And it's interesting because I was actually afraid of the ocean when I was a little kid. And we lived just a couple blocks from, you know, the Pacific Ocean. And my dad would actually have to take the car, drive to the beach, because I wouldn't get out of the car. I would not go near the ocean. And so now I can't get away from the ocean. Like, I've lived at the ocean for a long time here in Southern California. And when I leave, I miss it terribly. So it's funny how something has come full circle. So definitely California is in my blood. I love the lifestyle we get to live here in California. I love how healthy it is. I love that you can, you know, I can go north just a couple miles and I'm up in the Santa Monica Mountains. I can go down the street. I'm at the beach. You know, it's just absolutely the best place, I think.
Were you someone who always knew that you wanted to get into journalism or to be on TV as a kid or as a child? What did you think you wanted to be when you grew up?
You know, I really wanted to be an astronaut.
Oh my God.
Which goes to the daring side of me. And I would make my own spaceships out of, you know, like cardboard and stuff like that. And then I heard that there is kind of a restriction on height. Like, you have to be in between a certain range of height. And I never quite made that height restriction. And so I never had a dream to be on TV. Like, growing up in a military family, we lived on small towns once we got off base. It's not, Hollywood is not even in your frame of reference whatsoever. A city wasn't, you know, where we lived, it was fairly rural. People had horses and stuff like that. So going even into a city, like, we didn't even have, I remember the first time I saw a taxi, I was like 14 or 15. And I was like, and I saw this lady coming out of a house and getting into a taxi. And it just was this most amazing thing to me, because we didn't have like bus systems and taxis and stuff where we grew up. So television, no, absolutely not. But then when I went away to school, I heard about this place called, you know, Northwestern University. They had this great journalism program, and I'd always liked to write. And nobody from our small town had ever been, you know, made it through this journalism program. And they only took at that time 8 to 10 students a term in the grad program. And the competitive side of me just went, you know, there was a recruiter that came to my undergraduate school, and I thought, I'm gonna apply and I'm gonna make it through this journalism thing. And so that's what really started it, was just, you know, the first time I was in a newsroom was in, you know, was in grad school. I'd never been in a newsroom before. I had never written professionally or been on air professionally before or anything like that. So that's what all started it all.
Wow. Grad school too. So at Northwestern, you went to Northwestern's grad school.
Yeah, Medill has a journalism program. And yes. I just had, you know, the right professors who really saw, you know, my skills and got me on Chicago Cable. And then from there, I one of them had a connection who worked for an NBC affiliate. I think we were in NBC at the time. And he was looking for a reporter. And my professor came to me and said, I'm going to recommend you for this job. And if you want it, it's, you know, it's basically yours. And so I got a job on air without really having to send out resumes or anything. And that's unheard of in this business.
Oh my gosh,
you know, to be able to just walk in the door. And it was an eye-opening experience. I will say that, because again, that was my first experience in news. And I definitely don't think I was prepared for breaking news, which is what I ended up covering and specializing in, breaking and crime news. And it is brutal. It is brutal on the spirit is all I can say.
Yes. What market was that in?
So that was back in, I started in a small market, Champaign, and then worked my way all the way to the West Coast. So that's how I ended up back on the West Coast, which is where I ended up finally leaving news and staying on the West Coast and making the transition more into hosting on camera. Because I always wanted to tell stories. I've always loved to tell stories, but I never did it to be on TV. I was talking to somebody the other day and I was saying, you know, my ultimate goal was to be a war correspondent. War correspondents are probably going to die, but that wasn't why I did it. I think it was the side of me that wanted to find truth, wanted to make an impact in the world. If it was on television, so be it, but that was never a driving factor. Mm-hmm. And, but a lot of times, it's obviously not the best life for a woman, especially in some of the Arab countries where we were going to be required to abide by some of the laws there, meaning no driving and stuff like that. And I was really, after a while, the crime, you know, just covering so much crime, just really, I wanted a life, and you really can't have it when I'm like, why y'all got to kill each other at 2 a.m, 3 a.m, 4 a.m, like, you have no life when you're on that beat. And so coming to California gave me a chance to make two massive resets, one from news into hosting, which was amazing. And then from hosting into HGTV, which I never saw coming either. So yeah, two major pivots, both in California.
Yeah. And I can't wait to talk about that more. That is so exciting. But I want to go back to some of your hard news days, because a lot of people do start in that realm. They start, you know, in a smaller market and they cover a specific beat or whatever it is. In fact, I just had Natalie Brunell on the show, and she was the ABC News national correspondent, did a lot of freelance work for them. And, you know, she said that it was really one of those things where, as you said, it was hard for her to have a life, because you get the call and you got to go. And she was covering mass shootings, hurricanes, wildfires. And I sat there and I was like, Natalie, how did you stay sane covering all that stuff? And she's like, well, I don't do it anymore. Like, it was hard for me to do. It was hard on my spirit. So, I mean, there are some people who thrive off that and really like it. But I think, you know, to what you were saying, it's a hard thing to cover, you know, for your inner peace, I think.
Absolutely. And I think what made it even harder is that for me, at least, so much of it, especially now, is looks focused. And we would get, I will never forget, I had covered 5 children were killed by, I think it was a drunk driver on the side of the road. And I'm out there reporting on this horrible, horrible story. And it's a rainy, stormy day. And the viewers are complaining about my hair. My hair, her hair is in her eyes. Her hair is blowing all over. Why didn't she pull her hair? And I'm going, you've got to be kidding me. This is what we're concerned about. And so I think on top of how hard it is on your spirit, the looks focus makes it even harder, especially for someone like me who grew up in the military family, who's very much a tomboy. I'm really not that concerned about how I look when I'm out covering the story. You know, it's not E! News or something where I'm sitting in a newsroom. And so that was very disheartening for me. And I think it got harder and harder as I got older to cover horrible tragedies that happened to children, especially, that really begin to eat away at my own spirit. It started, you know, from the very first start of my career, that was always a very hard thing for me to cover.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. 100%. I'm so sorry they did that to you. That's so like inappropriate that someone would just be like you're not out there in your pajamas or something. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Come on, people. Like, geez.
Yeah. It's constant. And you usually can, you know, just kind of forget it. I mean, from the start of my career, It's funny to me how much people focus on looks, but that is our culture. And I don't know how we change that. When I started in news, I was actually plus size. And the response that we got from viewers was horrible. And my news director came to me one day and he said, Shay, I want to tell you something before, you know, you hear it somewhere else. But we are getting these complaints that, you know, you don't look like you were made for news. Because I was probably about a size 12 or 14 at the time. And I never thought, but very healthy, you know, I was always very healthy, but I never thought that my size impacted how I told stories. I'm like, come on, people.
Which size 12 or 14, isn't that the average size of the American woman?
That's the average size of the American woman, right. So I was pretty much the average size of the American woman.
Yeah.
You know, and yet we were getting, literally, he was getting complaint. They would call him and say, you know, just that they didn't like seeing me on air. And it led to, I will say, you know, just really disordered eating after that, because I really wanted to pursue a career in news, but it was hurtful. The things people say to your face, even in public.
Yeah.
Also because when you're on television, I think people, they see you as a commodity oftentimes and not necessarily as a human being. And so people would say horrible things to your face. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, I had one guy walk up to me and say, if you were 20 pounds thinner, I'd marry you. And I was just like, okay, you're going down. I literally kicked him where it counts. You know, I'll admit
I was going to say, I would have kicked him in you know right. what.
I did. You know, you don't want to mess with a military kid whose dad was a professional boxer, a semi-pro. So, you know, it's just because I did not handle the haters very well. I think I've had to learn over the years how to kind of let that go. And I think yeah. that's a part of our industry that has actually gotten worse and worse. And we see the impact of it constantly. And it's just so disheartening. And hopefully, gosh, I just don't know how we make that better.
Yeah, I don't know either. I think just, again, I'm so sorry you had to go through that. But I also feel like the way we make it better is by being kinder to one another, like leading by example, by being kinder to one another on social media. I think a lot of people hide behind the screen.
Yep.
And there are some people who will say things in a tweet, but if they were in front of that person, they wouldn't have the guts to do it. And they would, the person in front of them would remind them that this is a person with feelings and emotions, and they would shrink back and be like, oh, that's something I don't need to say. This person's right in front of me. I don't need to say it. But when you have a screen that's the buffer of that, people get all sorts of, like, you know, the thumbs start a moving and they release their inhibitions in that way. And it leads to people just, yeah, talking to people in just ways that is so rude and mean. And it, I think being kinder on the internet, I always try and remember that too. If I'm really fired up and I feel like getting my thumbs going, I take a hot breath and I wait and I think about it. And I, you know what I mean? Like, I wait and I try and see how I can do it in a better way. I don't know.
Yeah. And what I've started doing is basically I pretty much just stepped off social media for the most part. I'll have to get back on it, of course, for the television show. But I thought, you know, if I haven't talked to people in real life, do I really need to follow them on social media if I'm never going to talk to them? And just like I said, because of the amount of negativity, I just thought, you know, I can take long breaks from social media and I love it. I love being able to do that right now. You know, that, like I said, that might change with the show, but right now I'm like, you know, do I really feel like posting today? Nah, don't feel like it.
When you decided that you wanted to make a pivot, you decided that the hard news was getting hard on your spirit to cover. And you were like, I got to shift. I got to do something else. I give you a lot of credit because there are a lot of people who get in that and they're like, it's all I've known, or they're scared right. to make a pivot, or, you know, the difference between reporting and hosting is significant. So there are a lot of people who are unhappy with it, but they don't know how to make that pivot. How did you go about, you know, being like, I got to change it up. I got to do something different. What was the first step?
I think, first of all, recognizing when I came to California, especially, and I'm just going to say it, people were not interested in the kind of reporting I did, which is hard news, truth, investigative reporting. People want one side of a story these days. Mm-hmm. That's it. They're not interested in a full factual expose of topics anymore. So I started to realize, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be able to make a living as an investigative reporter. And I took a story to one of my news directors, and I had found this source for prescription drugs. This was before things got crazy with the deaths in Hollywood and around the world, around the country, especially. And I said, I've got this source. We can take in some undercover cameras. We can put these guys out of business. It'll be a warning. We can save some lives. And he said to me, I can't run that kind of story. I said, what are you talking about? We'll save lives with this story. He said, yeah, but we'll lose advertisers. The pharmaceuticals will never post around this story. And that was when I knew I either had to sell my soul to the devil or I just had to make a living somehow else. And I spent a couple years just kind of lost, to be honest with you, not sure what to do with myself. And then I saw this television show with this hosting coach. She was teaching someone how to be a host. He was a former professional football player. And her name was Marky Costello. And she was here in LA. And I thought, I'm going to call her. Maybe she can help me figure out how to transition from newscaster to host, because I had the skills. I had the on-camera skills. I had the teleprompter skills. I had obviously the live skills, all of that from TV news. And I thought, hosting, if I can somehow get rid of this hosting delivery, you know, because we have a very specific, distinct style, and it's just a whole different world, the way that you tell stories in news and the way that you tell stories in hosting. And I went to her boot camp, and sure enough, it was the key. She was the first person I met who was able to say, here's the difference between news and hosting, and here's where you have to get to, and you have a ways to go. She said, but I see something in you. And so that was the key for me, was understanding that in hosting, it's all about your personality. It's all about your point of view. And that was very new for me. And especially as a military kid, we don't necessarily show our emotions. We don't wear them on our sleeve like that. And we don't necessarily show our opinions that much. But what really freed me was then when she said, only half the audience needs to like you. Forget worrying about whether the audience likes you. And that was extremely freeing, because I think a lot of times, obviously, all of us want to be liked. And it's hard when you get that 50% that don't like you, but that means that you've done your job, because you've even expressed in a viewpoint that they are able to push back against. And that's the job of a good host. And so I was all of a sudden in my lane that led to something unexpected.
How good did that feel to like go to that boot camp, get this training, you know, when you wander around lost for so long, and then you were finally feeling like you were like, this is what I'm supposed to do. You must have just been like rejuvenated. I can do this. So pumped.
Well, it took a little while, even in the hosting world, because I started in entertainment and I thought, that's a complete, you know, opposite spectrum from crime reporting. And I'm like, but there's not a lot of depth in entertainment. So I was still kind of lost, because I wanted still to tell stories that matter. And I just couldn't make red carpets matter, but I was doing a ton of red carpet, and they're a lot of fun. They're a lot of hard work. Yes, you get to meet amazing people. And I was able to get connected with some, you know, people that were letting me go to all kinds of, you know, big events in Hollywood. It was an incredible introduction to Hollywood. You know, my first event I went to it was the BAFTAs, and Denzel Washington and Julia Roberts were getting awards. And my job was to literally keep an eye on them, keep as close as possible to them, and make sure, you know, there was nothing newsworthy and don't miss something. And I'm like, wow, this is Hollywood. Okay. It's really like what they tell you it is at a certain point. But I still wasn't completely fulfilled with just covering entertainment. Mm-hmm. So I was still searching and trying to figure it out. And that's where Host in LA has been a huge part of my life. You know, I run this group for hosts who are of all levels. And I thought, I'm just going to pour myself into Host in LA, because I can definitely make an impact to other aspiring hosts. I can provide opportunities for especially women and people of color. I can fight for equal pay for us. So that allowed me the outlet to really, you know, there's a fighter in me. There just is. And I wanted to use that somehow in my career. And I wasn't finding that in the entertainment world.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I love about you, and how I met you was through that Facebook group, Host in LA, is that I think that, you know, us as women, we're taught, or the patriarchy, you know, rather has conditioned us to believe that there's one woman in the C-suite, or one woman who's the editor in chief, or one woman who is XYZ, and that we should all be jealous of that, and that we should try and claw her down or say bad things about her or whatever, because we have been so ingrained that there's not many spaces for women. And at times that has been true. I think it's changing, but I also think that there's so much value in community and helping one another. And that really being a part of Hosts in LA, you know, inspired me to use this platform, this podcast, to build community and share our stories and what we've learned with one another along the way. Because I was telling someone the other day, like, I want my granddaughter to have all the opportunities in the world. The only way that's going to happen is if I am actively helping women here right now, today, every day, because that's how she's going to get the opportunities, is if we build a culture today where it's all going to be ready for her when she gets to that point. So it's so inspiring. And you and Host in LA really inspired me a lot when it comes to this show and how I move through the world even now, honestly. Yeah.
That's so good to hear. So I really appreciate you saying that. And I love how you're making this transition and I love your heart for it. It's definitely, you know, you can tell there's a genuine passion for it. Some people are just jumping on the bandwagon, you know, like people are like, oh, it's, you know, race issues and everything. I'm like, no, we have been fighting this for so long, people. Come on. And we still are, you know, especially as a Black woman, we still get paid less than anybody else on set. We still have, you know, so there's a lot of work still to be done. And I have to moderate my anger sometimes, especially in Hollywood. I'm like, oh yeah, you people are so woke in Hollywood that you ask for light-skinned Black people when you, and that just like, there's so many stories I can tell you. And, but that's one that just drove me crazy. And I, because obviously I'm not light-skinned and never will be. And so I'm like, but I have the skills you need. And I would write casting directors and I say, you just said you need someone with teleprompter who's African-American, but you want light skin. Give me a flipping break. So I definitely have made some enemies and I'm like, you know, I mean, and that's also why I poured myself into Host in LA. I thought I probably have made myself unhirable, but I would rather be standing for something than just going with the flow of the crowd. And yeah. So that's really why Host in LA for me was so powerful, was a place to channel all of that and say, you know what, I may not be able to get hired because I'm taking such a vocal stand on these things, but I know I can create opportunities for other people.
And you are getting hired. Yeah. People like your, you know, your views, and people like that you have something to say and you have something to stand on and you articulate it, and it's, you know, it's worth hearing and worth believing in. So you say you think you're not getting hired. I know you're getting hired, girl. Like, I know you're doing all the things. So that is part of what it is having an opinion and have something to stand on and to stand up for.
Yeah. And I will say, I feel like that's only changed in the last year or two, though, really, to be honest with you. And I'm glad that we're seeing changes. Yeah. And I was having a conversation at the same time that we're seeing changes. It's more scary than ever to be a host right now, because there actually is not, I don't like, part of why I'm not on social media, I don't want to just hear from one side. And on Facebook, you're getting one side. On Instagram, you're getting one side, because everything else is being censored or filtered through the whatever they call those people in the back room that censor everything. And I just can't stand that. I hate it. I hate it with a passion. That is not anything that's in my own DNA, to just have one side of a story. That to me is so boring. It is disgusting. And I love that, you know, I can have friends on the left, I can have friends on the right, I can have friends who are Black, white, Asian, gay, straight, atheist, religious. That's what makes my world dynamic. It's not because they're all in this silo, and I will fight that. And yes, Facebook comes after me, and I have backup to backup to backup to try to protect Host in LA. I need to get it off of there. But yeah, you can see I get fired up when we're just the shutting down of voices. We say that we're raising up voices. We are not. We are shutting down so many voices. And it just, it is a passion of mine to see people be able to speak so freely and not get just condemned for it, but for other people to say, you know what, I don't agree with you, but you do you. So that's where we are now.
Yes. Tell us some about kind of your journey to your new show. I want to hear all about your new show. And then I would love to hear some of your tips for being a good host and things that you can give the listeners. But first of all, let's hear about your HGTV show.
Yeah. So this is a fun pivot. You know, I know that word has been big in the last year or two, and it was one I never saw coming. And you would think I would have put two and two together a long time ago, because I grew up with my helping my dad renovate houses and prepare them for the market for sale. And him being a vet, he did not like going in enclosed spaces, especially, you know, the PTSD and everything. And so he would take myself and my little brother to the houses. And anytime there needed to be somebody going into the crawl spaces or under the sinks looking for leaks, all these, you know, those tiny places, he would send, you know, me under there to, you know, and tell me what I'm looking for with a flashlight. And I just felt like I was in Narnia. It was like another world when you see the underside of a house. It was fascinating to me. And so I stayed, you know, just as a side passion. I never looked at it as a career, but I started building houses then with Habitat for Humanity. Said, I want to learn how to build houses. I know that they teach you and they also let you do everything, and you don't necessarily have to have a degree in it. So I started to learn how to build houses with Habitat for Humanity. And one day I saw we had architects that would actually create the plans for the houses before they were sent to be built. And I was in the office and I saw the architects talking, and they were having a problem with one of the houses on a really narrow lot, but they needed to fit a certain number of bathrooms in this house. And I thought, hey, you know, guys, can I see the plan? I'm just curious what. And they were like, well, you can't really read architectural plans, but okay, fine. And I looked at the plan, and literally it was, to me, it was like reading a story. I don't care that I have never been to architectural school. I looked at that plan and I said, here's the story of this house. You need to flip this wall. You need to flip this here, and then this will fit here. And they just looked at me stunned, because it had stumped them for days how to make this fit on the lot. And when I looked at the plan, it was like, I looked at it differently. I wasn't looking at the measurement of the wall or anything like that. I was literally, it was like this, the plan was telling me a story. And so I still, to this, that's one of my favorite thing to do, is just look at architectural plans and see the story that the space is telling. And so that led me to decide, you know, I want to be making the decisions then. Because then they started coming to me with certain problems, and just the way that I was able to solve them, I thought, I really want to be the one in charge of the sites then. And so I'm going to go to night school and get my contractor's license. And so then that's what I did, just as a passion, just because I was getting asked to do different friends projects, you know, build. And a lot of it was commercial stuff at the time, but I loved the problem solving aspect of it. And so I did that. And then still just wasn't thinking to put two and two together with hosting or HGTV. Those just seemed, you know, just out of my league, really. Yeah. And I didn't really ever explore how to get into that world. And then during COVID, I was doing a lot of stuff hosting on Zoom, but I still wasn't doing anything in the home rental space. And then somebody posted a casting in Hosts in LA looking for, ideally, a woman of color who knew how to use power tools. And I remember it was kind of worded like that. And a friend who's known me for a long time, like, tagged me in it. And she was like, Shay, what are you thinking?
This is you.
Right. And I was like, wait a minute. And just the day before I had been, or a couple of days before, I had been doing an interview with Barbara Barna Abels, who's one of,
love,
you know,
Barbara.
Our big, Barbara's amazing. Shout
friend
out to Barbara.
Show.
Friend of the show. Another, yes, you had her on your show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing woman who's been in the industry, so much wisdom. And I happened to be interviewing her for a Host in LA Instagram Live, and she knew that I use power tools or something. And I said that, and she's like, what, Shay, why are you not in that home rental space? So it was like the message was starting to come through. Shay, why are you not in the home rental space? And so, but I didn't have that kind of a reel, and I didn't have the materials to support even submitting to be in the home rental space, because it's not what I had been doing, you know, professionally. But I got home that evening, and the deadline for that, the casting had said, this is our last call. The deadline closes tonight, because it turns out they'd been looking for like over a year for this certain position, because they had one host hired that they loved, but they needed the team, a designer and a contractor. And so I thought, well, I'm going to have to make a reel. I'll figure out a way to make a reel. And I came home and I looked through like all my videos and stuff like that. And a lot of times I had done my family's houses and other people's houses, or, you know, commercial auditions where I looked like I was doing something with the house, and I put it all together and I told my story. I just said, that's what I have. I have my story to tell, and that's what I'm going to do. And I sent it off that night about 2 a.m. and I knew that it was late, but I thought, I'm just going to send it anyway, because, you know, you just never know. And sure enough, the next day I was heading out, you know, way far away from home, and I get a call, and it's the casting director from the show. And it didn't say HGTV on the casting. It never said HGTV. So I didn't know that that's what it was. And she said, hi, I'm calling because we got your materials, but they were late. And I said, oh, yeah. And she said, but we loved them. And I said, oh, okay. She said, so we put you in the pool of candidates. And she said, but we had a deadline to get everything to HGTV today. And that's when I found out it was HGTV. And she said, so we sent yours with it, and we want to make sure that's okay. And I'm like, is that okay? Oh my God. I didn't even have an audition. I didn't have, you know, this callback. I never met the other. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm in the running. I couldn't believe it for an HGTV show off of just a reel, a minute and 30 second reel. You guys, that's how powerful it was. And then the call got even more strange in our industry. She said, oh, wait a minute. She said, I need, because I was getting ready to hang up and celebrate. And she's like, no. We've already heard back from HGTV. And I said, oh. She's like, you're their choice. And I'm like, oh, what? Wait, what? What is happening?
Yeah.
Because that's not the process. You know, one of the last times I was up for a network gig like this, it took 6 months. The process was 6 months of auditioning, all, and, you know, flying the team out and everything like that. So this was one of the most bizarre things that has ever happened to me in my life. I was ready to make the pivot, thank God, because it happened so fast. We were on site literally within, you know, a couple of weeks after that. And the first day I showed up on site was the first day I met my co-host. Like we never met before we started, just before we got ready to start filming. So it was all on a condensed time frame, and it was ideal for me because she said, we had just filled the contractor position. Would you be willing for us to put you up as the designer, which is actually my passion, is the interior design part of it. Both of them are, but so it all kind of worked out really, really well. So that's what you'll get to see when the show starts airing in January, is, you know, all the designs that I create and the interaction with the families and everything like that. So sometimes pivots, you don't see them coming, but when, in my case, it was something I'd been doing all my life. And so it was the right time. It was the right, you know, they say opportunity is when timing and preparation intersect. And so I feel like I was being prepared for something and didn't even really know it necessarily. And then when the opportunity presented itself, the time was right because it was COVID. I wasn't working, and everything had fallen into line.
It just sounds like so kismet. You know, I've heard that story before and I got chills, like again, just hearing it, because it just sounds so perfectly aligned for you, Shay. Like that job was like meant for you and it found its way to you, and you found its way, you know, your way to it. And I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, it really is interesting. And I will say it was also one of the most difficult times of my life. It didn't make sense sometimes. I was going through some family stuff back home. And so I was constantly having to say, is this worth it when I really want to be with my family? And so I have to say that it wasn't an easy time.
Yeah.
On a personal level. And especially we were shooting through the holidays. Literally, it was now what month is this? December. I worked 30 of 31 days last December, because we had to have everything ready for, you know, we were on such a condensed time frame. Everything about it was completely different. And a lot of that was because of COVID. The show initially was supposed to travel around the country. It ended up being here in LA, which worked out great for me since this is where I'm based. The other two hosts, one of them would just fly in back and forth. But yeah, it was one of those things where I'm so grateful in my spirit. I do believe, you know, it's part of like the plan that God has for me that I didn't see coming. And I think sometimes we fight so hard to get what we think is best for us that we're not willing to open up our hands when something comes along and we might miss an opportunity. And I definitely have done that before, where I definitely missed opportunities because either they weren't in a city I wanted to be in, or, you know, whatever the reasons were. And this time, I think something was, you know, was definitely different in me. And I also knew it was the right thing for me, even though, you know, going from news to home reno is like, what you do?
No, it's the perfect transition for you. And I know you're going to shine in it. I'm so excited to see it. And I'm curious, what is your tangible advice for people who, or hosts, I should say, that want to thrive in this field? It's so hard to, I think sometimes media coaches are a rare breed. And I think that it's harder to coach, you know, hosting or media in general, because a big part of it is like, be yourself, but also find your style and find what makes you different and find your niche in it all of, you know, but what is like your advice to hosts out there that are looking to take their career to the next level?
You know, as I probably told you as we were working together, and what I'm really helping host to find your story, find your own story, because that is where you can be passionate. That is what resonates. And in some cases it might be a story that you never saw. Like for me, I thought, you know, crawling under sinks when I was six, how does that relate to my story? Well, now you see how it does. And I was working with one man and he said, Shay, I just feel like the world has passed me by. I'm a, you know, middle-aged white man that's not what the world wants right now. I said, I'm going to ask you a personal question. And I said, you don't have to answer, but I need to know this answer. I said, are you gay? And he said, yes. And I said, there's your story. And that's what makes you a powerful person in this industry, because you've lived on both sides of that issue. And there are so many things you could do with hosting as far as helping families who have kids that haven't come out, or helping families who hate the fact that their kid is gay. I said, there's so much that you can do that is relevant and that is timely and that people need right now. And it has to do with your story. Mm-hmm. And I said, so I'm trying to help people really find their story. And sometimes, yes, it's a place of pain, the story, but that's oftentimes when we're our most powerful, is when we stop running from our place of pain and we figure out a way to help others with it. And so what I love about my show with HGTV, it's not your standard HGTV go in and get rid of the family and do this great design work. The family is a part of it from, you know, I'm not going to give it away actually, but I will say it's very different. And it allowed me to use my story mixed with their story to create something that is definitely very different. So that's what I would tell hosts, is find your story and figure out a way to tell it as concisely as you can on your reel. That's when it starts, because that's the only thing I think as hosts we really have that separates us. I see so many hosts, and I did this myself. We get caught up in, oh, I look really good in that clip. I'm going to use that one for my reel. Or, ooh, I sound really, you know, with it on that clip. Ooh, baby, that's good. I'm talking to the celebrity. And we make our reel out of that stuff. And it doesn't tell anybody anything. And every single other host has the same stuff. Every host probably has even a bigger name on the red carpet than what you have. And so you're not making yourself stand out at all if that's what your materials are looking like. And right after the new year, I'm going to be doing an Instagram live with Sean DeSimone, who's another one of our casting directors in the group. And we're going to be talking about how to prepare yourself for success in 2022, because a lot of us are still making the same mistakes. It breaks my heart when we've been talking about this for the last 2 years, ever since the industry made this massive change. I talked about this with Marky Costello on an Instagram live the other day. The industry has changed as a result of COVID. If we as hosts still have the same materials we had 2 years ago, you will not be competitive. You will not get that opportunity that you want. You've got to change as a host. We've got to be flexible. We've got to be resilient, and we have got to respond to how the industry is changing. Those are the things that I would tell hosts. And the industry has made massive shifts. And I stumbled onto this when it came time for my HGTV audition, because I didn't have the materials I knew that they would be looking for. And what I did was I researched for hours, what are HGTV hosts wearing? What do they sound like? Can I go find some of their audition reels on YouTube? It takes a lot of work to be successful. And I will say, I find a lot of hosts aren't doing the work. They just want the fame. And anybody who's been in this industry for a while can smell it a mile away. And those are generally not hosts who are going to be successful. In fact, I know we have a lot of frustrated hosts in our group because if you want fame, I would say, don't be a host.
No,
it's way too hard.
Go dance on TikTok, shake your booty on TikTok.
Exactly. Go be on a reality show or something else and get your fame that way. But as a host, I worked, like I said, 30 of 31 days last December. If you can't do that, if you can't put in the hours and are passionate about a subject, you're not going to last anyway. So yeah. Why make yourself miserable? Why go through the, you know, humiliation of a public firing? Yeah. Yeah. So it's, people think it's about fame or something as a host, and that's going to be the last thing that's going to make you successful.
Yeah, 100%. I just had on her episode, I just recorded it the other day. Her name is Zora Stevenson, and she's the sideline reporter for the Milwaukee Bucks. That's my hometown basketball team. And she mentioned something like that. She has a great job. And she says she gets a lot of people who slide in her DMs and are like, I want to have your job. Like, I want to be famous. And she's like, the first thing I tell them is like, if that is your goal, like you ain't going to make it, because it's a lot harder than it looks. She puts in so much work that no one sees. And B, you're not going to have the stamina to outlast the bad days or like the bullshit that goes along with it. And I'm like, you're doing them a service by telling them the truth, because that is the truth. You're right. If you want to be famous, like go on The Bachelor. Like, you got a better chance. I mean, yeah. That's really what you care about, is just, yeah, like having your 15 minutes of fame. Like you have a better chance with that than you do, like, you know, trying to make it as a host.
Yeah. Just the world of fame can be so, so, so ugly. And that's on, you know, both the people who are in it and famous and the people who are the viewers. And it's like this collision of a world that, I'm going to have to learn how to just like get my hands off of my fight for justice sometimes, I think.
I think you're going to do just fine. I can't wait to see it all unfold. I have one more question.
Sure.
What advice would you give 20-year-old Shay?
I always like that question. And what comes to me today, though, is a little bit different. And that is, it's okay to let go of people who can't support you. That has been, I think one of the hardest parts of my journey. You think that people who have known you, in some cases, like for me, all of my life, would be the first to say, yeah, go to Hollywood. Yeah, go to LA, give it a shot. And really those were the first to say, no, what are you thinking? That's just the dumbest thing. And again, where I'm from, it's just, it's not our world at all whatsoever. And, but I realized a lot of times, okay, sometimes that's their fear, their own fears for you. And sometimes it's out of love and you have to be able to discern, okay, that person's really just speaking out of their love and their fear for me. And other times it really is that they just want to hold on to you for selfish reasons, that they don't want you to go. And one of the greatest things for me was when I was getting ready to come to LA was it was became very clear the people that could support me in that. And like even my landlord up in San Francisco, I had a great living situation. I was living in San Francisco, loved them as a family. It was, you know, I had the bottom flat and they lived upstairs and had watched the kids grow up and everything. And I thought she's never going to let me go. So I'm not going to go to LA. And when I went to her and said, hey, I have this opportunity, you know, cause we had just signed a year's lease too. And I said, I'm just exploring LA. And she said to me, she said, Shay, I'm so relieved. And I thought, what? And she said, watching you has been like watching a butterfly with its wings cut off.
Aww.
And I thought, oh my God, I know. And I thought that is the essence of love that she was saying, go because you got to find your wings. And I was very happy. So I didn't feel this sensation of I need more, but she could see potential in me. And there were several people and I'm like, that was love. And one of them I went to, I was actually working for him, but I loved him as a dear friend. And I said, hey, you know, I have this opportunity. Didn't want to leave him. And he said, I don't want to hold you back. And those are the people that I have learned to hold on to, the ones who say, I know that our relationship is going to change. I know that you're no longer going to be here, you know, present every day, that I can just go run over and see you, but you go anyway. Mm-hmm. And so I've had to learn really, how do I navigate, you know, the ones that have not believed that I could do it. Especially being a Black female who's older, who's not from the hosting world. I get what they were saying. You know, I don't look like, especially when I first came here or even now, you know, I'm not your typical e-host looking, you know, I'm not, you know, a size zero and blonde haired, blue eyes and, you know, 24 years old. So I understand what they were seeing at the same time. And there were some I just, you know, needed to let go because they were never going to support me. Even now when it's happened, I think they're like, what the heck? at this level, I mean, I think it's hard for them still to humble themselves and say, wow, you know, you did it. And that's, so now I'm really seeing, okay, who do I navigate this world with? And so that's what I would tell hosts and what I would tell 20-year-old Shay is also at a certain point, you have to start being really careful who you navigate life with. And I think that probably goes for just about anybody.
Yeah, I think so too. Who you decide to bring along with you is important.
Yeah. Yeah. It will affect everything about, you know, your well-being, your habits, it affects everything for sure. So we got a lot of good people in hosts in LA that I've been grateful for. You know, we mentioned a bunch of them and I know I've left a bunch more out. I didn't mean to mention so many by name, but those that I did mention by name have been instrumental in supporting us as hosts. And I don't know where I would be without them. And so I'm very grateful for the group and for people who get it. They get what we're doing and that we're not just trying to be famous. They get how hard it is. They love talent. They, you know, when I first worked with Sean DeSimone, it was years ago, and I was up for one of the network castings he was in charge of. And he just gave me so much critical advice about what I was doing right, what I was doing wrong, what, you know, what they were looking for, what they weren't looking for. And just people like that, that's who we need in our corner. So I hope that, you know, so it is encouraging, you know, the things that you said, the people that, you know, I've been able to connect, and hopefully we'll get to do a lot more of that in person again, starting in 2022.
Oh my gosh. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Tell everyone where they can find you. I know that you, you know, have boundaries with social media, but if you want to put your handles out there, we would love to hear them.
Yes. Well, so I'll start posting a lot more as our series gets closer to air next month on Shay Holland Official on Instagram. And then if they are a host or want to explore that, Host in LA is on Facebook and Instagram as well. So probably can just find it's, you know, just host HOSTS in LA. So those are the two primary places.
Thank you so much, Shay, for your time. It's been a pleasure to get to know you. And I can't wait to see you just grow those wings even more.
Oh, thank you, Carrie, so much. This has been a delight, and you too.
That was the host of HGTV's Unfinished Business, Shay Holland. For more information on Shay and all of the past guests I've had here on the Candid with Carrie podcast, head to carriegillespie.com/podcast. If you made it all the way to the show and are enjoying the episodes I am bringing you here week after week, it would mean the absolute world to me if you went to Apple Podcasts and now Spotify and left the show a 5-star rating and wrote a review about why you like it. It means the world to me. I read them all. It makes me smile ear to ear. We are so close to getting to that next tier of reviews, and it would mean a lot to me if you would be a part of us getting there. Keep up with me in daily life on Instagram. I am at carrie.gillespie, and the show is at Candid with Carrie. I am also on TikTok, and I've had a TikTok account for a while, but I wasn't doing much with it. That has changed this week. I am ticking and talking all the things, so go check me out there. It is at carrie.gillespie. I want to thank you guys once again for being a part of this amazing community. It is not lost upon me that you give me your time each and every week, and that is the most wonderful and precious thing we have. So thank you so, so very much for being here. I will be here again, same time, same place next week. In the meantime, make good choices and be kind to others. Bye, guys.